You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough. You're listening to Halford and Brough.
Over the blue line to Dylan Larkin. Now to Raymond. He shoots.
Oh! Goodness!
You play the right way, you get chances, you get teams to crack a lot more earlier in the season.
You know, I heard Skinner say the teachers will crack any minute.
I gotta think about it for a while. All right, he's playing.
We're excited.
Good morning, Vancouver 601 on a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. It is Halford, it is Brough, it is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintech Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
A-Dog, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience a Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today we are in hour one of the program. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. We're getting closer and closer to the start of the playoffs. That means more commercials, more advertisers, and more reads. This one comes courtesy Milwaukee Power Tools. The Milwaukee 100th Anniversary event tour is coming to Dick's Lumber in Burnaby this weekend from 7:30 to 3:30. Food truck live demos and more. Don't miss it.
Please don't make fun of Dick's Lumber.
It's Wednesday, 7:30 to 3:30. Someone texted in, an employee of Dick's Lumber said he's already concerned about parking. Get there early. Dick's Lumber, Milwaukee Power Tools,
this
Wednesday.
Occasion.
We are coming to you live from the Kintech Studio, Kintech Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sorfie, what are you waiting for?
Kintech, I'm getting excited. Last night, we were doing scoreboard watching. Me and Brough were sending texts back and forth furiously, watching the results pile in across the NHL, trying to do the math on who's going to play who. I'm getting excited. Big show today, too, as we get closer and closer to the start of the playoffs. Greg Wyshynski is going to join us at 6:30 from ESPN. We'll go around everything that happened last night, everything that's going to happen over the next few days, including a bunch of big games tonight. Try and figure out that Eastern Conference playoff race. It's pretty exciting. 7:30, Pat Steinberg from Calgary is going to join the program. It is the final home game of the season tonight for your Vancouver Canucks. They are taking on the Calgary Flames at Rogers Arena. It's fan appreciation night at the Rog. Jerseys coming right off the players' backs at the end of the game. We'll get the Calgary side of things. We'll talk about the red-hot Andrei Kuzmenko with Pat Steinberg at 7:30. 8 o'clock, Brendan Batchelor, play-by-play voice of those Canucks. He will be on the call tonight. Canucks Flames, 7 o'clock from Rogers Arena. We'll talk to Batch about everything that's going on, including Thatcher Demko making his return to the lineup tonight. That's very exciting. Working in reverse on the guest list, 8 o'clock, Brendan Batchelor. 7:30, Pat Steinberg. 6:30, Greg Wyshynski. We have a lot to get into. So without further ado, Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No.
What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. For another day, we still have no clarity atop the Pacific Division. That's because the Canucks did not play yesterday. The Edmonton Oilers sort of played an NHL game while they were taking on an AHL opponent in the San Jose Sharks. They won 9-2, so they are still in the running to finish atop the Pacific. Also, I suppose we should not discount the fact that if the Canucks do win their final two regular season games and the Dallas Stars do not get a single point out of their game on Wednesday against the St. Louis Blues, the Vancouver Canucks could move atop the Western Conference standings and finish first overall.
Yeah, it's all very unlikely, though. According to Sports Club stats, there's a 91% chance the Canucks will play the Preds in the first round.
We should mention
91%. That's pretty high.
Because of what happened last night with the Kings losing to the Minnesota Wild, it was almost guaranteed that the Nashville Predators were going to be the number one wild card team. It is now guaranteed. They are 100% locked in. So whoever is the second place finisher of the two division winners will play Nashville in the opening round. But there's still much to be decided in the West. Again, much to be decided across the National Hockey League because there's only two playoff series locked in right now. One is in the East, and kudos to the New York Islanders and Bo Horvat. They punched their ticket to the playoffs, so they will take on the Carolina Hurricanes in the opening round. And in the West, we only have one locked in, and that was done over the weekend, where the Winnipeg Jets will play the Colorado Avalanche.
So let's start with the Islanders, and for some reason my thoughts immediately go to Pittsburgh, which is weird because they're not the Islanders, but I'm thinking of the Penguins and going, if they're looking at the Islanders, I'm wondering if Sidney Crosby's looking at the Islanders and going, we couldn't finish ahead of these guys.
How the hell are you in the playoffs?
Like, really? Really? Especially the way the Islanders looked like 10 games ago. They look like they were done. And they're going to make the playoffs with a significant goal differential.
And right now, 38 wins.
A minus 18 is their goal differential. The Penguins actually have a positive goal differential at plus 5. And I know that doesn't mean anything when the only thing that matters is the amount of points that you get. And the Islanders have 92 and the Penguins have 88. But still, like, this Islanders team, I've heard a lot of people saying it's going to be a great series with Carolina. I'm like, really? I think it might be a short series with Carolina.
I don't have much hope for the Islanders either. I suppose if you're going to take anything from their regular season success, it's that they know how to get games late into games in overtime because they played a whole lot of them this year. So,
I mean, look who they beat down the stretch, though, right?
They had a very favorable schedule down the stretch.
They beat Philly, Chicago, Columbus, Montreal, New Jersey. Yeah, they had an impressive win over the Rangers, and the same could be said, I suppose, for a home win over Nashville, but I still don't think the Predators are that good. And that might be a massive jinx, but we'll see. Congratulations, I suppose, to the Islanders.
Yeah, don't be a hater, bro. Do you want to hear from Patrick Waugh? Because he was very proud of his team.
Well, I mean, good for Patrick Waugh, right? He was hired to get the Islanders into a playoff spot, and he's succeeded.
So here is Patrick Waugh talking about just how proud he is of Bo Horvat and the rest of the crew following a 4-1 win against the Devils last night, punching their ticket to the playoffs.
Very, very, very proud. I mean, they played some very good hockey down the stretch, and they were resilient. They worked together. I mean, I think we learned how to win. And what I love is again today. I mean, tonight it was a 2-1 score. The score made it 2-1, and I felt like we were calm and we didn't change our game. And that's a really good sign. I mean, that makes me extremely proud of these guys.
So great. You beat the Devils. They're going to miss the playoffs too.
You are on your way to the playoffs though, Patrick Waugh. Congratulations. You've got a date with the Carolina Hurricanes. We're actually going to work in reverse of the teams that are in or very close to being in, and then to the teams that are trying their best but are just going to fall short. The Washington Capitals. They are the only team left now of the Capitals, Flyers, Red Wings, and Penguins that control their own destiny. Somehow, by the grace of God,
I can't believe it.
Charlie Lindgren and Sonny Milano leading the charge.
And a minus 38 goal differential.
Yesterday, the Washington Capitals and Charlie Lindgren had a 16-save shutout against a very not interested Boston Bruins team yesterday, but who cares? The Caps win 2-0. Huge win against the Bruins. Win and they're in now. That's the situation for the Capitals. And here is their head coach, Spencer Carberry, talking about how proud he is of his team.
As good as we've seen on home ice when we needed it the most, I thought. The game, especially through the first two periods, was so clean. All the things we were doing with the puck, without the puck, the way we defended, we're losing guys. We had a few guys go down, but everybody was just so connected with everything that we were doing in all three zones. So it was impressive, and we needed it, obviously, to stay in this fight. Now it comes down to the last day.
So that loss by the Boston Bruins also brings into the possibility of Bruins-Leafs in the first round. Because the Bruins only have a 1-point lead over the Florida Panthers. You said they were disinterested in their game. They should have been more interested if they want that first place spot in the Atlantic Division.
Well, it was Charlie Coyle after the game was quoted as saying, we played a team that was looking to get into the playoffs and we played like a team that was already in, and that's not good. And they just, I mean, if they, put it this way, if you're getting 16 shots on goal against Charlie Lindgren and the Washington Capitals. You probably don't have your foot on the pedal and the pedal to the metal. You're probably taking it easy. I'm not sure what the Bruins want here, to be dead honest. It mostly comes down to whether or not you want, I guess, the home ice advantage throughout or what have you. But that'll be really interesting to see, because I'm not even sure from a Leafs perspective what's the better matchup there. I don't know if you want to take on the stingy Florida Panthers and a team that you asked for last year that swept you out of the playoffs, or whether you want the Boston Bruins. Anyway, the reason that we did it this way, talked about the Capitals and the Islanders first, is I don't know if you agree with me here, but I feel like the two least interesting of these teams are going to get in, and that's the Capitals and the Islanders, because I would have loved to have seen Detroit and Pittsburgh get in. The Detroit Red Wings.
If Detroit misses, I will miss them.
The Detroit Red Wings, for as flawed a team as they are and as dysfunctional an outfit as they can be at times, they play some of the most exciting hockey in the National Hockey League, especially down the stretch. So yesterday, game of the night, without question. Once again, the Red Wings are facing elimination. They got to get points out of this game against Montreal. They are down 4-1 in this game. When it's 4-2, someone at Little Caesars Arena chucks an octopus onto the ice. Then the comeback begins, and then with just over a minute left in regulation, and the sequence of play, we don't have the full thing, but Shane Gostisbehere makes a play at the blue line to keep the puck in, where he jumps approximately 35 feet in the air. Like, best vertical I've ever seen.
Good hops on that guy.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Keeps skates.
Keeps the puck in, keeps the cycle going, and then it falls to Lucas Raymond. This is Lucas Raymond with a minute 17 left. Just listen to the energy as he ties up the game against Montreal.
Larkin, Gostisbehere, Perron, cuts to the middle, down low Raymond, chance to shoot, he scores!
So the Wings got what they needed to stay alive. They got the point there, but they could sure use that second point, right? They're playing a non-playoff team in Montreal. Guess who does it in overtime? It's Lucas Raymond yet again. People going bananas in Detroit. Wings win 5-4. Here's what it sounded like.
Lead pass in for Larkin. In space for Raymond. And he scores! Lucas Raymond! Overtime winner!
Like, they're an absolutely insane team.
He's clutch, man.
But nothing they do makes sense. They played Toronto over the weekend in another must-win game. They're leading 4-1. They blow the 4-1 lead. They manage to get it back in overtime. Last night, they're down 4-1, rally, and then they have this. They're playing with the most energy and the best vibes, but unfortunately, they don't control their own fate. Is they're going to need help, just like all these other teams not named Washington, to get into the playoffs. So what we're looking at here is Washington, real simple. They take on Philadelphia, win, and they're in. And that kind of wraps up the story in the East. And that'll be at a great loss, I think, for NHL fans. This Detroit team is exciting. Mm-hmm. They haven't been in the playoffs in a long time. They, to me, are the biggest story. The second biggest story, the Pittsburgh Penguins, who also, because they left it a little bit too late, and although they had a pretty big win yesterday over Nashville, it looks like they're going to, I mean, their odds right now are somewhere in the neighborhood of like 16% or something like that. It looks like they're going to be on the outside looking in as well. Again, another big game from Sidney Crosby and Erik Karlsson, a goal and an assist each. Penguins remain in contention for the playoffs with a 4-2 win over Nashville. Mm-hmm. But it looks as though they're going to fall short, because they're going to need help on the out-of-town scoreboard, and they're going to need to win their final game of the season if they have any shot of getting into the playoffs.
So there's only two first-round series that are absolutely locked up. One is in the West, and that is Colorado versus Winnipeg, and the other's obviously in the East, and that is the Islanders and Carolina. Now, there are a few people texting in and saying, wait a minute, if Vegas wins their last two home games, wouldn't they move ahead of Nashville for the first wild card spot?
They're sigh. Like,
yeah. But they'd also move ahead of the Kings. So Vegas would then be in third place in the division, and the Kings would drop down into a wild card spot. And the Kings cannot move ahead of Nashville.
Right. Nashville is locked into the first wild card.
Yeah, Nashville's locked into that. Okay. Yeah. So because of what happened last night, yeah, just a few people, I know most people aren't, but a few people are are texting in about that, so I just wanted to address it.
They're trying
to
do the gotcha thing. It's like, actually, guys.
I think you should take a closer look at the standings.
Maybe you want to relook at the Western Conference standings. Buddy, I've looked. This was like the guy yesterday that was convinced somehow that Detroit could have survived the weekend. He kept texting in. He's like, you don't understand. I'm like, no, you don't understand. I don't know what to tell
Look,
you.
Look, I have a giant playoff standings matchup on my wall. I'm looking at it right now.
Now, in the defense of all of our listeners.
It is confusing sometimes.
And we get a lot of things wrong on the program.
Yeah, that is also true.
So you guys are more than right to text in with your, well, actually.
You're right to doubt us.
Yes. Honestly, this time of year, my eyes kind of start glazing over. It's just so, there's so many possibilities and potentials.
I'm going to disagree with that analysis.
Can we just start the playoffs now, please?
I am excited. Look, but this is how you get excited.
I know you love
the playoffs.
This stuff.
Well, no, like last night.
This guy can hop this guy, and this guy can match with this guy, and this guy falls under this guy.
Detroit last night was playoff hockey.
Oh, that was
great.
Was
do or die. The energy was crazy. They were going nuts. That's it. That's what's getting me excited. I miss that. I miss a win being celebrated like it is the biggest thing you could possibly do on the planet.
Totally.
Even though you got to come back two nights later and do the exact same
thing.
Well,
I think it's especially true in Detroit because they haven't seen the playoffs for so long.
This is playoff hockey for them, and they're going to miss.
I have Detroit, like the standings open here. Their goal differential is hilarious. Like the Red Wings have scored more than the Florida Panthers.
Oh, yeah.
They have,
but the problem is they've given up almost 100 more goals against the Panthers.
Yeah.
It's actually a wild team.
It's actually interesting. If you were in charge of them, you kind of wonder what you'd do in the off season or what direction you chart for them, because you don't want to take away from any of the excitement that the Red Wings have, and you don't want to take away from any of the exciting young goal scorers that they have, but you also need to learn to defend. Like, if you look at their last three games, it's almost the story of the Red Wings season.
They're all shootouts.
They didn't
go to the shootout.
Yeah, but
they all went to overtime.
So they went to Pittsburgh. They lost 6-5 in overtime. They went to Toronto. They won 5-4 in overtime. And last night at home versus Montreal, they win 5-4 in overtime. So, yeah, I mean, Laddie's 100% right. Like, this team knows how to score. But then sometimes you watch them and you're kind of like, you guys have any idea what you're doing in the defensive zone?
I have a question for Steve Yzerman and the Detroit Red Wings. How good would you look with a couple of defensemen like Quinn Hughes and Filip Hronek? Just wondering.
They need to defend more.
Well, I mean, their biggest issue right now is their blue line, I would say. There's a lot of guys there that are very run-of-the-mill defensemen playing huge minutes.
You're just trying to dunk on him for Zadina, basically.
They traded away Hronek because they didn't want to. I mean, granted, they didn't want to deal with what the Canucks are about to deal with in the offseason with his contractual status. But, I mean, I'm just saying, like, the Canucks are going to the playoffs with a first pair of guys that one was a Detroit Red Wing and the other one was in their lap. They could have taken him, and they didn't. So I do like dunking on them for that, by the way.
Vegas and the Edmonton Oilers, all of a sudden, that is looking like a probability as opposed to a possibility.
Sorry. That's a heck of a series.
Sorry, I missed that. What?
Vegas and the Oilers is now looking like a probability as opposed to a possibility.
LA last night losing to Minnesota on home ice, by the way, where they were receiving some boos after the second period. That was costly for them because it really just sort of it ruled out moving in, like falling into the first wild card, which was a possibility.
I love your idea yesterday. Put Dallas and the Kings together so we can kind of ignore them.
Yeah, I was quietly cheering yesterday for the Minnesota Wild. Like, Kaprizov banked the puck in off Cam Talbot to make it 3-0. I was like, yes, because I could see the standings falling the way that I wanted to. Like, put LA and Dallas in the I don't care bracket. It doesn't, you know what? That series doesn't even have to be on TV. You can just tell me the result when it's over, and then they become relevant, right? Like,
there's going to be some Stars fan out there that's like, how can you guys call them boring? They score a lot of goals. They have Jason Robertson. And you're like, it's the fan bases that I don't care about.
It's not
for me,
that,
it is at least.
It's not that I don't care about them. I don't. But it's not that I don't care about them. It's just that if they're going to win and they're going to advance anyway, just go ahead. Like, pass go and collect your $200 and we'll catch you on the other side.
So now we know it's going to be the best series of all.
It's going to be a huge electric factory of a series. I'm going to be like, damn, I wish I hadn't have done that. No,
I think that did actually happen a few years ago. There was a series, or maybe it was even last year, there was a series.
Was it the Minnesota series?
We called it, like the We Don't Care series, and it was like an amazing series. I was like, all right, we'll watch it, fine.
Fine, I'll watch game
all
seven.
All right, let's talk about the Vancouver Canucks, because they are in action tonight against the Calgary Flames. two objectives tonight. One, clinch the division and make the Winnipeg game on Thursday meaningless. So it gives you all sorts of options. You can rest guys. You can play Thatcher Demko or you cannot play Thatcher Demko. Speaking of Thatcher Demko, number two, the objective is to get Demko back up to speed. Is one game enough? Is it going to be enough for Thatcher Demko to be like, all right, I'm ready for game one of the playoffs? One game against Andre Kuzmenko and the Calgary Flames. Yeah. Yesterday at practice, the forward lines were, the lineup was pretty much the same as the one, or it was the same as the one that went up against the Edmonton Oilers and beat the Edmonton Oilers over the weekend. So that means that, yes, the third line, but with Elias Lindholm is still a thing with Connor Garland and Dakota Joshua, it means that Pugh Suter is still with Brock Besser and JT Miller. It means that Mikheyev is still with Pettersson and Hoglander. But everyone's eyes are going to be on Thatcher Demko tonight. And here's Rick Tocchet. Do we have this audio of Rick Tocchet talking about how hard Thatcher Demko has worked in order to get back to this position where he can play with just two games left in the regular season?
Since he's been out, you know, he's at the rink twice a day. He's by himself sometimes with a therapist. He's here at 7 a.m. He's here at 7 o'clock, like 7 p.m. He's worked really hard to get to this position. And, you know, like really hard. He's probably accelerated the process because he worked so hard. I think that's contagious. And it just shows other players, you know, the dedication and how bad he wanted to come back and help this team.
So it's great that he worked hard. I mean, we all know that Thatcher Demko works hard. But it also makes you wonder, geez, if the playoffs hadn't been started like now, like how much longer would he be out? And it just makes me very curious to see how he's going to look tonight. Now, as for Thursday's game, all the reporters around Rick Tocchet tried to get him to answer questions about, you know, what if this, what if that? And Rick Tocchet wasn't really having any of it, although we know, like, Rick Tocchet wasn't like, these questions are ridiculous or anything.
Sure.
He wasn't angry at the questions, but he was just like, listen, there's a lot of what ifs right now. You know, what if the Canucks don't clinch the division tonight? What if they need to go to Winnipeg and actually get a win in order to clinch the division? That kind of changes everything. What if Thatcher Demko, you know, these aren't Rick Tocchet words, but he basically said, listen, I'm not going to address what ifs. Mm-hmm. We're going to deal with the game tonight against the Calgary Flames, and then we'll reassess. Because if you think about it, there are all sorts of what ifs. I already talked about one. What if the Canucks lose tonight to Calgary and they still have to clinch the division, so they have to go to Winnipeg and, you know, get a result at least? What if Thatcher Demko looks shaky? What if he looks rusty? And you're thinking, ugh, like to get maybe one more game? Doesn't even matter if it's a meaningless game. One more game for Thatcher Demko.
It's just a meaningless game. You don't have to play him the whole thing. Play him half. Take him out midway through.
You can play him at center if you want.
Yeah, you can really do whatever you want. The rules are really
now
open.
You're on to something.
Yeah.
Get his skating legs back.
Yeah, come on.
You
know? Oh, really?
Come on, Thatch. You got to get in.
Hold
on
everybody.
Take some face-offs. Take some face-offs.
Everybody, we got breaking news out of Buffalo.
Sportsnet 650, breaking news.
Well, the Buffalo Sabres didn't even wait for the end of the regular season. They have fired head coach Don Granato and assistant coach Jason Christie and video coordinator Matt Smith. This comes courtesy.
He's like, what did I do?
did the Germans from The Simpsons buy the Buffalo Sabres? This is how.
We'd like to announce the following layoffs.
Sorry, Don Granato, but and Jason Christie and Matt Smith, but this is how the Buffalo Sabres tweeted it out. The following members of the coaching staff have been relieved of their duties. Head coach Don Granato, assistant coach Jason Christie, video coordinator Matt Smith. They did not say that is all.
Oh,
after
I was hoping they would have.
They should have gone, yeah. That is all. But like, that's a very Was that like a follow? Was that they just threw that out there?
Like a shot fired almost.
It was a post on.
There was nothing on like we'd like to thank these guys for.
They should have done. The following people have not been laid off.
List the whole organization.
Okay, so all joking aside, I do want to say that this was kind of hinted at from a variety of Buffalo Sabres writers, including. I think Mike Harrington was on top of this vibe or sentiment that although Granato was well-liked by the players, he wasn't getting the results. And this is an organization that has a history of a very, very short timeline and very, very much a lack of patience when it comes to getting results from their head coach. Since 2013, so in an 11-year span, this team has had the following coaches: Lindy Ruff, Ron Rolston, Ted Nolan, Dan Bylsma, Phil Housley, Ralph Kruger, and now Don Granato. That is a lot of coaches to run through in the same period of time where the Tampa Bay Lightning have basically had one head coach, John Cooper. This was another disappointing season for the Buffalo Sabres. I think a lot of people thought that they were going to take the leap that the Detroit Red Wings have taken this year, where they were right into the thick of the playoff chase until the very end. The results were not there. And Don Granato, as I mentioned, although very much liked by the players, ultimately did not get the results. Barely a better winning percentage than his predecessors like Kruger and Housley.
We regret to announce the following layoffs, which I will read in alphabetical order.
Granato, Don.
That is all.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough. You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.
Rogers Arena, calling Canucks games. It is Brendan Batchelor, Batchelor, Batchelor.
8:03 on a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford Brough in the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour three of the program. Brendan Batchelor is going to join us momentarily. Hour three is brought to you by Campbell and Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell and Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today.
We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio, Kintech Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sorfie, what are you waiting for?
Kintech. Okay, so tonight, 7 o'clock, Rogers Arena. It is the final home game of the regular season. It is fan appreciation night. The opponent is the Calgary Flames. The NHL has just sent forth all of the clinching scenarios for tonight. So here's what the playoff picture could come into real focus tonight with the Canucks-Flames game, because if the Canucks get at least 1 point against the Flames, they clinch the Pacific Division title. We know this.
Hang the banner.
If the Canucks lose in any fashion to the Flames, the Stars get their own banner, the Western Conference title. Meaning, if the Canucks were to lose in overtime or the shootout tonight to the Calgary Flames, get that point but lose, they would not be able to catch Stars for first. They would be locked in to that number two.
With the Preds.
That's right. So
Preds are locked into the first wild card.
They can't move. So it would all come into focus tonight. That's what's at stake tonight. It's exciting. I'm excited. Let's go now.
I'd be okay with an OT loss, to be perfectly honest with you.
Can you throw a game in overtime?
Oh, you sure could.
You can't, but if you pull the goalie, you lose the point.
No, I know, but you can shoot it into your own net.
It's true.
Do you think that would cause an investigation?
Could you imagine?
Is it pulling the goalie, though, if he's still on the ice as a center?
He has to physically leave the ice.
Yeah, so put him as a forward.
Who would you choose to shoot the puck into your own net and you would maintain plausible deniability that he meant it?
Okay, so I'm just going to... This is in no way related to professional sports.
Old question.
Anything that I ever played was the most lowest amateur sport ever. But I played... there used to be an Italian league that was a soccer league that was run in the summers.
Mm-hmm.
I played on a team that once scored in our own net to...
yeah, you've told the story before.
Yeah. The worst,
it was not well received.
Maybe the worst move in the history of sports. I cannot even begin to tell you how poorly it was received, both by the players on our team and everybody else that watched it happen.
So nobody wants to answer the question about which player would you choose and maintain plausible deniability he meant to do it?
It'd be funny if it was McKayev. He's like, oh, now he finishes.
To the phone lines we go. Brendan Batchelor joins us now on the Halford
Guy's a
show
sniper.
On Sportsnet 6.
Always knew it.
What up, Batch?
I was going to say McKayev, too, so there you go.
Okay, good. I didn't want to... I felt like we were flying too close to the sun,
by even just discussing this idea, but we've done it now, so what the hell. Anyway, it is final regular season game at home. It is Fan Appreciation Night. As I just mentioned, there's a lot at stake. And of course, Batch, it's the return of Thatcher Demko for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see how he's able to sort of get himself back up and running here in the lineup. And he talked about it yesterday that, you know, it's one thing to practice, but to get into game situations with, you know, 10 guys flying around and tracking pucks and all of those things is going to be the work he needs to get in here and tick a bunch of boxes in terms of his return to play. But, you know, if you want to base how he might do off of how he performed when he came back last year after an injury that held him out twice as long as this one, he was pretty good down the stretch last season. So hopefully he can have a good game tonight, feel confident, maybe go to Winnipeg and play on Thursday as well. I guess we'll see, depending on clinching scenarios and rest and all of those sorts of things. And then we'll find out when they start the playoffs after that.
What do you think about that? I mean, tonight is obviously going to be the focus for Calgary, but do you think Rick Tocchet is honest in his assessment? He's like, listen, we're not going to make any decisions now or based on the Winnipeg lineup. They're just going to wait and see all the scenarios that could possibly play out and then decide on his lineup for Winnipeg?
I'm sure he's got an idea of guys that are banged up that he might want to give a night off. Now, how many guys you can give a night off based on, you know, your roster and salary cap implications and stuff like that, you know, that's going to be above his pay grade to a certain extent. So whether they could call up a couple of guys so they could sit even more guys for that game, I guess, depends. I'm sure he's got a good idea of who he would sit. But at the same time, you know, there's a lot of stuff in flux here. And, you know, let's say they don't play very well tonight or have a step back, he might want to send a more representative lineup to give them another chance to, you know, have a strong game and feel good about themselves before the end of the regular season. And, you know, in the case of someone like Demko, he might really want him to get another game, and Ian Clark might want him to play both of them. And then I think the factor that could play in as well is when this team could start the playoffs, because we heard Elliott report yesterday that it might be Tuesday. So are you really going to give some of your players a whole week off between games? I know in a scenario where they play the Predators finish tonight, so they would have a whole week off, but you might actually want your guys to play another game and, you know, be a little more or not have rust be a factor, I guess we'll say, if it is indeed going to be as long as Tuesday before this team starts round one.
What do you think about, I feel like I ask you this every week, the new look forward lines? Because I think I asked you last week if you thought, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, I can't keep track, if you thought that the Canucks top six would be the top six that they go into the playoffs with. And at the time, it was JT Miller between Connor Garland and Dakota Joshua, and Brock Besser was up with Pettersson and Hoglander. It's since changed because Elias Lindholm came back to the lineup and Rick Tocchet said, okay, I want Lindholm between Joshua and Garland on, if you want to call it the third line, you call it the third line. And then Besser was back with Miller, and then Suter rejoins that line, and McKayev rejoins the Pettersson line with Hoglander. So now do you think that the lines that the Canucks have as currently constructed are the ones they'll go into the playoffs with?
Assuming health, yes, I do. And the reason why is that this is pretty close to the lineup that they ran with most of the year, especially in the first half when they were having a lot of success. Like, we saw Miller and Besser never left each other's sides in terms of being on the same line. Pettersson's line mates changed, but he was anchoring his own line, and Hoglander's been on that line since early February now, so you know, at one point it was McKayev, Kuzmenko, Lafferty got a chance there. You know, there was a bunch of guys that were rotated in and out, but Pettersson stayed on that quote unquote, you know, whether you want to call it the first line, the second line, whatever, the other top six line. And then the third line was Garland and Joshua and had Bluger in the middle, but now you've acquired Lindholm, so he goes in there, and it gives you some added depth to make Bluger your fourth line center with Lafferty, and then whether it ends up being Podkolzin or DiGiuseppe on the other side, I think that's maybe a little bit interchangeable. But, you know, I think it's sustainable, and I don't think it's a coincidence that they played one of their most complete games in a few weeks against the Oilers on the weekend, the first period aside, because, you know, this is how teams have success in the playoffs when you're able to roll three lines that you have confidence in. And you've got like a designated shutdown line that you trust against the top lines of other teams that could also be your third line with Joshua and Lindholm and Garland. So I really like the way the Lions are deployed right now. I would be loath to change them if I was Rick Tocchet, because I think it's a setup that adds the most depth. You know, you trust the Miller line against top lines. You certainly trust the Lindholm line against top lines. And then maybe it allows you to get the Pettersson line some favorable minutes and matchups, especially through the first two games of the first round when you have the last change and you can control that sort of stuff. And then I even like the Podkolzin, Bluger, Lafferty fourth line. I think, you know, they had a pretty good game in Edmonton and could give you some good minutes in certain spots throughout games as well. So, this is maybe the most I've liked the forward line since Lindholm arrived, and I would like to see them keep it this way.
So I am going to try not to massively jinx the Canucks in their final two games of the regular season here, but assuming that Thatcher Demko comes back and he looks good and everything's good with his knee and he's healthy and the rehab has worked, they got to feel pretty darn good about the health of the team heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, no serious injuries to core players right now. You know, most of your top guys will have finished the year healthy. And again, I'm knocking on wood as I'm saying all of this. So take that into account. But yeah, I mean, if Demko looks good, then you've got him back. And not only do you have him back, but you have him back after being well rested from recovering from this injury. You know, I've liked the way that Lindholm has looked since he went out and rested his wrist problem and worked through that. It's about as good of a situation as you could hope for going into the playoffs to have this level of health. And yeah, guys are dinged up and have, you know, bumps and bruises. And we know that, you know, Besser has missed a few practices lately and Pettersson missed a practice a couple weeks ago. So, you know, that's always going to be the case when you go into the playoffs. But, you know, I think a large part of this season, and, you know, credit the Canucks, they've had a great year. They've been very consistent for most of the season. They've got a chance to get to 50 wins tonight, which is not something that this team has done very often in its 50-plus year history. But one of the big reasons why they've been able to do that is because of health and, you know, the fact that their top players haven't missed much time. So they're going to need for that to continue to happen into the postseason. And if it does, then, you know, this sets up well for this group to potentially go on a pretty good playoff run here.
I know Rick Tocchet was asked and was talking yesterday about the size that the Canucks now have on their back end and how much Rick Tocchet hopes that pays dividends in the playoffs. Just maybe your thoughts on how the Canucks are constructed on the defense and how that might play out in the playoffs. What do you think the pairings are going to be? Is there a top four, or is it more like a top two and a bottom four?
Yeah, it's probably more like a top two and a bottom four. But, you know, what I think about is late last year when the Canucks were playing out the string, they played Vegas late in the year, and Rick Tocchet had all sorts of praise for the Vegas blue line and their size and their length, but also that they could skate and they could move the puck. And it's pretty clear that they've modeled the way they've redesigned their blue line after that Vegas model to a certain extent. Like, you know, other than Hughes and Hronek, all of the guys that you've put out there are long, rangy defensemen who can help break up plays in the defensive zone. But they've got, you know, a solid amount of puck moving ability, you know, outside of Hughes and Hronek as well, I think it's fair to say. So, you know, I like the way the blue line's constructed. I think probably going to stay the way they are right now with Hughes and Hronek, Susie Myers, and Zadorov and Cole. And if anything, I would imagine that we see the minutes for that top pairing go up quite a bit once we get into the playoffs, because that's the one thing that I think Rick Tocchet deserves a lot of credit for is, you know, Quinn Hughes is this game-changing player that tilts the ice when he's out there for you. And Rick Tocchet has still got him only around 24 minutes a game when, you know, last year I think he averaged nearly 26 minutes a game after Tocchet arrived to the end of the season, and they weren't playing for anything at that point. So, you know, now you can take the reins off Quinn Hughes when you get into the postseason. You can use him a lot more and lean on him a lot more, and that's what I expect to see at the expense of some minutes, probably for that Zadorov-Cole pairing. And, you know, I think that's a potential game changer for this team to have Hughes out there so often, because we see how, you know, top defensemen that play a lot can really impact the game. You know, Drew Doughty does it in L.A. still, you know, at 34 years of age, I believe he is now. He's still averaging more minutes than anyone else in the league. And, you know, I think Quinn Hughes is capable of playing 26, 27, 28 minutes a night, maybe even north of 30 if you get into long overtime games and you know, want to lean on him in those scenarios too. So that'll be a big difference, I think, from what we've seen in terms of the deployment in the regular season, is that Hughes could get a few more minutes per game, and that could be very decisive in helping the Canucks have some success in the playoffs too.
What's the biggest wild card for you? For me, it's Elias Pettersson, and there's like no doubt about it in my mind. You know, I just see if he can up his game, and I know time's running out a little bit on the regular season for him to do that, and I don't know if you can just flip a switch and become an amazing player in the playoffs, but for me, you know, if Pettersson can regain his form from earlier in the season, you know, other times in his career, I really like the Canucks' chances of going on a run here. If not, I think it's going to be a lot tougher.
Yeah, that's fair. I think the biggest thing for me is, will his line be able to drive play in the matchup that they're in? And, you know, like I talked about already, I think there's an opportunity to get that line some softer matchups, especially at home. But, you know, on the road, let's say, where maybe they get matched up against the second line of the other team, or potentially the first line of the other team, if the other coach is trying to keep his top guys away from JT Miller and away from Elias Lindholm, then there's pressure on Pettersson there to help control play in that scenario. And obviously he's an offensive player. You want to see him produce, but I'm more interested in the two-way side of things for a guy like him, to make sure that if he does get in one of those matchups where he's playing against top players, that they don't get caved in territorially, that, you know, they can try and control play and dictate. And that, to me, and Randeep has talked about this for weeks, but I agree with him completely, like, could be the single biggest defining factor in whether the Canucks can have success in the playoffs. Because you know what you're going to get from the Miller line for the most part. You know what you're going to get from Joshua and Garland, and whether it's Lindholm or whoever plays in the middle with those guys. You know what they can do in terms of establishing the forecheck and playing a grinding game. And I think the playoffs will be really suited to the way that those guys play. But it's that Pettersson line. And, you know, whether it's Hoglander and Mikheyev on it or however it ends up looking, you know, those guys need to drive play and need to make sure that, you know, they're not a liability when they're out there. And then, of course, any offense they can produce would be great too. So, you know, that comes down to Pettersson and him elevating his game at both ends of the ice. And I agree. I think it's the biggest thing that I would look at going into the playoffs and say, if it goes well for them, they've got a chance to have a lot of success. And if it doesn't, then it could be one of the defining factors why they don't.
Batch, this was great, man. Thanks a lot for taking the time to do it. We appreciate it. Have a good call tonight. Good luck against Coventry on the weekend. We'll do this again next week.
Yep. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Batch. That's Brendan Batchelor, play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Canucks here on the Halford and Breff Show on Sportsnet 650.
Is that the FA Cup?
Yep. It's United versus championship side Coventry, in which pretty much everyone is going to be rooting for the underdog. Big underdog, Coventry.
Right.
And then in the other one, it's City against Chelsea. Chelsea 6-0 over Everton yesterday.
So City could pull another treble, right?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm.
They got to get past Cole Palmer, their former player, who's now lighting it up for Chelsea. Found the back of the net 4 times yesterday.
Is Coventry super religious?
No.
They sound like they'd be like a bunch of paladins, or they'd all have knight's armor or something.
They are not, Andy.
Oh, okay.
I am sorry.
Soccer's boring.
What about the young boys? How religious are they?
Just a golden opportunity there. To,
you know what?
Just gonna, I'm not even going to go down
just
that avenue.
Move past that one.
Oh, the young boys?
I am going to stay on the subject of the football of the international variety, though, as it pertains to the Canadian men's national soccer team. My, what we learned, and this just came down confirmed a few moments ago, Canada has booked another major international friendly, this time against the runners-up from the 2022 World Cup in Qatar, the French national team. That's right.
That's incredible.
Canada, in the span of 3 matches, we'll be playing against France in Bordeaux on June 2nd. They'll be playing against the Netherlands in Rotterdam on June 6th. And those two matches are in preparation for the opening match of the 2024 Copa America, in which they will be facing Argentina and Lionel Messi in Atlanta on June 20th. So what a run of matches for the Canadian men's national team. We're a long way away from playing Netherlands, Antilles, and Belize competitively.
Yeah, we get the real Netherlands now.
That's right. Now, they will be facing Lionel Messi and Kylian Mbappe within the span of 14 days, which is an amazing thing. It's really cool. I hope that the Canadians will be able to put forth a good performance, perhaps something a little more scintillating than their slog of a 2-0 victory over Trinidad and Tobago in Copa America qualifying. But whatever the case, as tumultuous and as bad as the program has been both on the men's and women's side over the last little bit at the executive level and at the fundraising level, the fact that they're able to book these friendlies is a very good thing. And I'm trying to be
optimistic. It's kind of sad that none of them are at home, but I understand. You know, the Copa America is not in Canada, and the reason that France and Netherlands are looking to book these friendlies is because they're warming up for the Euros.
Yeah, and I should mention, like, it doesn't just end with those. So the match against Argentina obviously is going to be a massive test. They play Peru is one of the, I mean, all due respect, but it's one of the weaker South American countries. Chile, who they play in the final group match at Copa, very talented. And then they booked another friendly for September 10th against Mexico, a perennial CONCACAF powerhouse. So it's going to be a great summer for the Canadian men's national team.
Unless I get bombed in all these games, then it won't be so great. And then it'll be a little bit worrying.
And there's the kicker. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, Moot, count me on that. Hey, you listeners, I got a question. Can you send in some What We Learns? Everyone seems to be texting in incorrect information about the Canucks and where they can finish in the playoffs, or where I don't, you know what?
Stop
texting in about what you think can happen with the standings. We've laid it out correctly.
People are really getting tripped up by, they look at the standings and they get zeroed in on the wild card.
Yes.
So they sit there and they go, well, wait a minute. If Vegas wins their final two games, then they'll pass Nashville and they'll be in the first wild card spot, which in theory, like, makes sense. You're like, wait a minute. Yeah, that makes sense. But no, you have to remember that they would in fact pass LA for third place in the division. And if LA drops into a wild card spot, then Nashville is guaranteed to finish ahead of LA. Nashville has the tiebreaker on LA. So Nashville, trust us on this, is locked in to the first wild card spot. So the only way that the Canucks will play Vegas or LA in the playoffs is if the Canucks win the Western Conference.
Yes. And that could all come to a close tonight, because if the Canucks lose in any fashion to the Calgary Flames, Dallas clinches the Western Conference. But if the Canucks were to gain a point and then lose in overtime of the shootout, Dallas would clinch first spot and the Canucks would move and clinch second, thereby facing the Nashville Predators. This will be the last time we explain this on the air.
No, it won't.
We are now going to ask you to send in What We Learns that do not have us re-explain this or relitigate this live on our radio show. Send them in. Dunbar Lumber text line is 650-650. What did you learn over the last 24 hours in sports? Let us know.
I think I've learned that the NHL does need to just go back to 1-8 just so we don't have to explain all these scenarios.
And, okay, here's the other thing. We do get enough wrong on this show. You're right to question us. But just trust us on this one. We've gone over this so many times that we've pretty much got it committed to memory.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.